Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 118, recorded live on August 18th. Caching with your Android. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W4 and
Montu Ryder.
If you want to participate on our show today, please call 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with our other listeners, and that can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. You can click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. Our voicemail line is 206-350-3GPS, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. Well, Montu, welcome back. It's been a couple weeks since you've been here. How have you been?
Oh, tired, but glad to be home. Had a very good week of teaching geocaching to the kids up at the Courage to Stand Pathfinder Campery up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Starting Tuesday at noon, we went 4 classes an hour each teaching, and then Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, it was 8 hours of classes. But all in all, I think we did about 1,000 muggles. Weather was hot, much hotter than I thought it would be. In fact, last Tuesday night while you guys were recording the show, I was in the emergency room due to a heat stroke. No air conditioning in those buildings where we were teaching. Since that nice little trip into the ER, I made sure to make it a point to advise people to be drinking plenty of water both when caching and, of course, when teaching geocaching in a hot hangar. But all in all, it came out pretty good. Even got some photos posted to one of my travel bugs. TB1QVTN has some photos from the class. Nobody would bother to take a picture of me, though, so don't have to worry. There's none of me. But even had a few of our listeners that came by, and I'd like to say to all that did stop by, thank you very much. I enjoyed meeting you all. Too many of you to name here, and I'd hate to mention a few and then forget some. So just thank you all for stopping by. So how'd your week go, guys?
Well, I went on a geocaching run this weekend, but right after the show last week, I actually started my 12 of 12. And I think probably for the first time, I got a photo at just after midnight starting off my 12 of 12 while I was wrapping up some other projects. But it was a fun, challenging project this time because I tried limiting myself just to the iPhone. And we'll include the link to the photo set in the show notes, and it's already in the chat room for anyone who's interested. But it was a lot of fun, and I'm definitely looking forward to next month's geocaching 12 of 12. But I assure you, I'm going to bring the big camera out. I'm not going to hassle with the iPhone and try to deal with its limits. But this weekend, we did a virtual caching run to the west side of the state and even as far south as South Bend, Indiana. We hit a 2-day total of 24 virtual caches, and in the process hit number 2,700 without even realizing it. But I did post a quick entry to our blog with an overview of the caches and, you know, how we planned it, but it's real quick. And again, I'll post the link in the show notes, and that's already in the chat room for anyone who's interested. But Andy, I understand that you were in my backyard on Saturday.
That is true, Daryl. I think this is one of the most fun things I've ever done. We planned for my son's Eli's birthday, which is September 1st. We planned to take him to Thomas up in Flint, Michigan, Thomas the Tank Engine. They've got at a old historic place there. I mean, a place obviously you've been, taken some pictures there. And there's a railroad, so I figured you'd be there. But they've got the whole, like, you can ride on Thomas. Well, not on him, but, you know, he pulls the train car, and they meet him and Sir Topham Hatt and all of the fun things that you probably don't know about unless you have got kids. There was Bob the Builder was there. It was just a really cool, fun day. I think I enjoyed it about as much as my kids did. It just was a lot of fun and real, real hot, but it was definitely worth the 3-hour trip. You know, we went up there. Did the Thomas thing and came back. I was exhausted by the time I got home, though.
Well, I'd imagine, but it gives you a good excuse to act like a kid again.
It does. I mean, it seriously was a lot of fun. I mean, you know, you would have thought that I was Thomas's biggest fan, I think, because it was definitely really, really cool, and I'm still talking about it. Now, as far as caching goes, didn't really get a chance to do any caching, but yeah, me and you just switched places. You know, I was going to go cache. I was going to see about caching in Flint, but our day was just so quick with trying to get to and from, it wasn't going to work out. But now you did mention
With the 6-hour drive, it doesn't really work all that well.
No, it was. I definitely, in fact, even by the time we got into Indiana, I said, Julie, you need to drive. I'm just exhausted. I'm barely staying awake anymore. So she drove for a little bit too. So it was a fun week though. Now, you did mention the geocaching 12 of 12, and we do have a promotional audio for here for this. Let's go ahead and play that.
There's a fun worldwide event coming September 12th. It's another 12 of 12 photo day and prime season for geocachers to get out, find some caches, attend events, and share caching with the world.
We have some information about what you need to participate at geocaching12of12.com, but there's not much to it. Any camera, including a camera phone, will work. Then you just need to take photos of your day, pick the 12 best images that tell the story of your day, and post those someplace the world can see them.
We're really looking forward to seeing the photos of how you cache and with whom you're caching. With the 12 of 12 photos being shared worldwide, maybe we'll even get some others interested in joining us on the trail.
It's also a great chance to get some practice shooting photos while caching. Try methods to get yourself into the photos like many virtuals and Earth Cache require. If you're at an event, get some photos of the games and the fellow cachers to include with your logs as well as posting with your 12 of 12 set. Just remember not to post spoiler photos of a cache. Try moving the container away from its home to get a photo of the cache with your team. Clever containers are great to share, but make sure you don't post information to give away which cache it is.
Don't forget that it's just fun, too. Check out geocaching12of12.com for information about joining in. How about a little photo tip for cachers to try before we get back to the show, Daryl?
The self-timer is a handy tool when you want to get yourself in the photo. Have you thought, though, about using it to take pictures in low light? Find a surface a camera will stand on nicely, set the self-timer, compose your shot, press the shutter release, and stand back. Using the self-timer in this fashion allows a camera to stabilize before taking the picture and reducing the motion blur without needing the flash.
Now I'm on to, there's been some news from Grounds Peak. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, Thursday, August 13, Grounds Peak rolled out their latest round of bug fixes. This was rolled out earlier than expected to address a critical internal issue. Details about the release are available in the Groundspeak forums, and we will link to that post in our show notes.
All right, we received a voicemail from a listener on our voicemail line, which is 206-3503-GPS, so let's go ahead and hear that.
Hey, this is Chris Rain from Texas. I love the show, what I've heard so far. I'm having to catch up on a bunch of old episodes since I just got into geocaching about 3 weeks ago, but I bought a GeoMate Junior as my first GPS unit and found a few caches that way. That's the episode I just listened to. And it's a great little GPS unit. However, it's like you said, that for the serious geocacher, and usually I get serious about things pretty quickly, it just didn't do what I needed. And I went ahead and asked around to like the best people who had the highest numbers of finds, and quickly figured out that the Garmin 60CSX was what everybody pretty much around the board preferred and didn't have any problems with. So that's what I'm using now, and I bought that less than 3 weeks in, after only 2 geocaching trips. So it's like you said, like if there's somebody who's going to casually do it every once in a while, then the GeoMate Junior is a fine tool. But for somebody who knows that they're quickly going to become obsessed with it, I mean, I don't even know if I would bother purchasing it, because the Garmin 60CSX does pretty much everything I could ever ask a GPS unit to do in regards to geocaching. But that's all I have to say, and I'll continue enjoying the podcast if you continue making them. Thanks. Bye.
Well, thank you very much for that voicemail that you had called in for us. Again, that's good feedback for the GeoMate Junior. If you're just starting out in caching, it's maybe a good thing. But if it's something that you get out, you get serious into things quickly, go ahead and get yourself a full-fledged GPS. Now on to the geocaching question of the day.
Geocaching question of the day. Bad cop asks, you answer.
Hello. This is the Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope my little project keeps you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. This last week, I posted a question from fellow geocacher Nevada Wolf, who wanted to know, do you have a specific non-event cache that you would make a major trip for? If so, which one? 2/3 of those that replied said they have made a major trip just for a cache. The majority of the caches mentioned are right here in the Great Northwest, such as the Ape Cache, Groundspeak Headquarters, and the Original Stash. Those three caches are known as the Triad. If you come out for Geo Woodstock 8, set some time aside to get these three historic caches. What about you? Would you make a major trip to find a geocache? You want to find out more? Follow me, The Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Tonight, we're going to be talking about caching with the Android. So we're welcoming Fidian to the show this evening to talk about his experience with geocaching with the Android OS. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, being that none of us in the geocaching podcast community are currently Android users, we're really excited to looking forward to hearing about the options for that platform. And for listeners who aren't familiar, Google Android OS is an open source option for mobile phone manufacturers. Currently, the only Android phone available in the U.S. is the HTC G1 from T-Mobile, but that's quickly changing as more are coming out with some phones. So I think that's the phone, though, that you've been using is that G1. Could you tell us a little bit more about the phone itself?
It is a slide-style phone, has a full QWERTY keyboard. Internally, it has a nice 3D compass, a 3-megapixel camera, no flash, and a nice, decent GPS. It also can figure out your location based on just the cell towers around you. That gets you down to the portion of the block. And the GPS will eventually kick in. You can get to like within 10 to 15, 20 feet sometimes of where you actually are.
So it sounds like hardware-wise, it's very much like the new iPhone 3GS or the Palm Pre, and about a year earlier than either one.
Now, also, too, if there are people listening live with us that have any questions tonight for Fidian, go ahead and give us a call, 724-444-7444. If you're in our chat room, go ahead and press the request to talk at the top right-hand corner. If you're not and you're just on the phone, go ahead and press the *8 key. Now, tell us a little bit about the options that there are for caching. Obviously, it's got an internal GPS, so I'd assume that there's software. Can you tell us a little bit about the software that you've experienced?
Well, I've used CacheMate and GeoBeagle. Now, CacheMate is a lot like the CacheMate for the Palm, and I have no experience with the Windows mobile devices, but it's like a CacheMate tool for your phone. You can sort lists of geocaches. You can filter them based on difficulty and terrain. You can find out how close they are, and you can navigate to them. It also uses SMS to tie into text marks so you can log your geocaches. It has a Google Map in the app, so it can place all the geocaches in your phone onto the map so you can see where they are in relation to you. The only downside to that one is that it's very slow when importing caches. It took me 7.5 minutes to import 500 caches. Another one out there that's under active development is GeoBeagle, and it is ugly. But it's under active development. The new GUI looks nice. They have sketches up on their website. It took me only 2 minutes to import those 500 caches. And it's much more of a go find a cache kind of thing. It'll show you the nearest caches, one, and you're already hunting it. It does let you use SMSs to log your caches, just like how CacheMate does. It also integrates with a couple other programs. It integrates with the Google Maps that's on the phone. The difference between this one and CacheMate is CacheMate has its own Google Maps, so you can see the picture and pan around. GeoBeagle will actually use the Google Maps app, so you can get directions. Let's see here. It also integrates with the browser, which is really handy because you can hit the web page button when you're hunting a cache, and it takes you to the cache page, so you can look at it there. If you're hunting on a spur of a moment, you can use the browser on your phone to go to a cache listing, hit a link, and then you're hunting it with GeoBeagle. You don't have to type in coordinates. But as I said before, it is ugly and somewhat non-intuitive.
So for the most part, you use the CacheMate?
I use GeoBeagle.
Okay.
CacheMate did not sit well with me. It seemed more to be like managing your cache listings, whereas I just want to go out and find them. I want to go to a spot, find me the nearest, and head out. And GeoBeagle just, you know, fits that niche for me. There are other programs out there. There's one called GeoCacher, another one called GeoDroid. I haven't used GeoCacher at all. The reviews in the market have been somewhat scathing. And the GeoDroid app, when I used it, which was admittedly a while back, had bad problems. It would crash. It would become unresponsive. It had a hard time, you know, even finding a set of coordinates. Now, apparently a developer has been working on that and fixed that. I just haven't decided to try it out again.
Now, I believe that was actually the first of the geocaching apps for the G1.
It was.
And we did cover that, I think, when it first came out. But could you kind of give us a little bit of background about how it is that you cache?
Well, I usually go to the geocaching website on my phone and we'll hit the Google Maps link. And GeoBeagle ties into that Google Maps link. So then I tap on GeoBeagle, and now I'm hunting the cache. It has an arrow and coordinates and distance, and I head off. And because the phone does not work well under heavy tree cover, I usually end up punching the coordinates into my Garmin GPS 60 also, eventually hit the cache, and then I go back at home and log in online. I don't use the text marks.
So basically you're using it like a two-handed operation, one for the paperless essentially on the G1 and the other on the 60 CSX. What were you doing?
The confidence level yet on my phone only.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. Can you tell us what you were doing before you got the Android phone?
I was using CacheMate on a Palm.
And then pretty much the same kind of workflow?
Yeah, I'd preload my Garmin with all the geocaches in the area, preload the Palm, and again, one hand GPS, one hand PDA.
And how do you find the quality and accuracy of the GPS on the Android?
I think it's good. I mean, I have my Garmin GPS 60, and that's, you know, gold standard. This one comes above my other cell phones I've tried, and I have a little internet tablet I've tried. And this one actually has a decent GPS receiver. It actually gets a lock inside my house. I let it plot coordinates for a whole night, and the majority of them were within 10 to 15 feet of my window, so it was quite good. Not to the point of one of those high sensitivity receivers or the Garmin 60 or 76.
No, if anyone has any questions for Fidian, go ahead and give us a call, 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Press the request to talk in the upper right-hand corner. If you're listening to this later on, and just as a podcast, go ahead and call our voicemail. Our number is 206-350-3GPS. We do have a question from Geekboy. He said, how's the battery life on it?
The battery life on the G1 used to be horrible, but now it's just bad. The update, they actually recently updated the operating system to version 1.5, or Cupcake, and that made improvements, but I go through maybe one day without using my GPS. I have to charge it immediately. And when I do use my GPS, I'm not going to go out for all-day caching run. It's for hitting a couple here and there and then head home and probably plug it in again.
So probably about the same as what you're getting on the iPhone, right, Daryl?
Yeah, the iPhone I'm actually getting a little bit better than that. Not a whole lot. But the advantage is with the iPhone, you've got such a nice array of external battery packs. That means you don't have to power it down. Now, the G1, I believe, has the interchangeable battery pack. Am I correct?
It does.
Yeah, so at least you have the option of getting a couple of extra batteries and swapping them out. But I've actually become a big fan of not having to swap, but rather just tack the battery pack on the backside and pull it off when you want it, or when you don't want it. Because it means that it's light when I don't need it, and I never have to power cycle to change the battery.
Well, one thing I have is a USB port in my car. So when I'm out and about or using my phone for navigation, I just plug it into my car and charges it right there.
Yeah, and this is one of the things I think a lot of people coming from the dumb phone market quickly find about smartphones. The smartphones always seem to need to be charged in the car. You just automatically have that charger there and you use it constantly. And back in the dumb phone days, I never really used my car charger.
Now, are there other software that you're finding useful for the geocaching or anything else for as far as related to with the G1?
Well, there's two more apps. There's a very basic Compass app, and it's called Compass. And it's nice, gets you where you want to go. The other one is called GPS Status, and that gives you oodles of information. Number of satellites in the sky, where they are, which way is north according to the compass, which way is north according to the GPS, all sorts of good, fun details. I can't get myself to delete that one. It's just fun to look at the screen sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's one that I would probably be using a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those apps that's just going to be fun for those geeks and like us who want to just stare at something when they don't have anything else to look at. Well, how about any other geolocation apps that you might have tried? Is there anything else that's come out that you found interesting?
Oh, there is one. I was searching the GeoBeagle mailing list, and apparently they're thinking about tying into Wikitude, which is an augmented reality browser. So you use your phone's camera. You point it out at the horizon with Wikitude. You see a picture of the horizon, and on it, it is overlaid points of interest. So if you're near the Eiffel Tower, you'll point at the Eiffel Tower. You'll see the distance to the Eiffel Tower, a little label saying Eiffel Tower, and then maybe even a write-up about the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, I've seen some of that augmented reality stuff, and most of that seems to be happening on the G1, I think in large part because Android is open source, and it's the open source community pushing augmented reality right now.
Yeah, I can't wait till I can hunt a geocache by looking through my little magic window, and I can see the cache hiding there behind the tree. More or less.
I'd love to see that kind of technology come into, like, where I go. Might make it a lot more entertaining.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, start seeing monsters overlaid on the real world.
Wasn't there an app called My Private Park or something like that?
Well, there's a...
Overlay fairies?
Yeah, there's a app for the iPhone, 3G or 3GS, called Hidden Park. And I actually did do a module for one of the parks in my area, you know, sent them all the information, but unfortunately that still has yet to be released. But when it does, I'll give it a chance to see what it can do. But it's still pictures, it's not live video, unfortunately.
Is there anything else, Fidian, that you'd want to put in here? What are your thoughts? Any other reviews on the phone in general? Anything?
I'm sorry, I can't think of anything.
Well, let's ask this. Are you planning on upgrading to a non-G1 phone anytime in the near future?
Oh, no. No, I'm definitely stuck on these G1 phones.
Well, I was going to say, are you planning on one of the new MyTouches or maybe even, sounds like the G20 from Nuvi or from Garmin is actually going to be Android-based. I was wondering if you were going to look at either of those.
Oh, I suppose when my contract's up, I'll be looking around, but... The field has definitely narrowed to all the ones that have Android and the Google synchronization because I love having the ability to be able to drop my phone in water. Well, of course, I really don't want to do that. Go get a new one, punch in my user ID, and all my contacts come back. And all my emails synced up again. I love that.
Yeah, there are some definite benefits to being in the cloud.
Yes.
Well, if there's no other questions or comments, let's go ahead and wrap up. Join us each Tuesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. You can also call our voicemail line, which is 206-350-3GPS anytime, and leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and keep on caching.